It's time for some Monday morning quarterbacking here on Newstalk 1400 DWS. You can reach us at 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line at 351-5357. Or you can email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are the Monday morning quarterbacks, Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Monday morning quarterback show. We'll be here for the next couple of hours, and we do this before every or during every football season and the basketball season, and I hardly ever see Tate before.
Jim, it's great to be on with you again.
Quite a shock to see you this morning.
How many years have we been doing this stuff together?
Too long, evidently.
I'm trying to. Do you remember the actual year? I mean, when you asked me to come on I think we were in California doing a basketball game. You asked me to come on, and that must have been 19 what? I mean, it was
way back.
Was it in the 60s or had we gone into the 70s yet? 1960s?
Well, I didn't come here until 1980.
No, we were doing games for WILL.
Oh, I get you. Okay. Yeah. Oh, you're counting those. Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's when we first started collaborating, wasn't it?
That was.
That was really fun.
That was the beginning of something. Well, this week, I noticed a thing in that Josh Whitman had put online last night. Eight competitions and eight victories.
Yeah, it's good. They've got a couple soccer wins. Tell me, you know more
about
the
cross country. They got two cross country.
Well, you know more about volleyball than anybody. Tell me, what's going on? Are we really better? Beat Louisville. That's pretty good, isn't it?
No, yeah, Louisville's not as good. They've lost three or four. Now, Western Kentucky was ranked 24th in the nation.
So
we beat them down there.
So Illinois is playing a little better than they were at the end of last season under Hambly?
I think it all depends on the competition. We'll know more once. I think they're playing very well, and the reason they're playing so well, listening to the coach and to Dave Lone, is that they are passing the ball well. They're getting the ball to the setter, which is the most important thing in
Poulter.
It really is the most important thing. One of the most important things in volleyball is being able to pass that ball to the setter. So the setter doesn't have to run all over the court making the set.
Right. If she's in a good position when she gets it, she can set up the corners a lot better.
She can go to the corner. She can go in the middle. She can take it over herself. She can do most anything. But if she's running to the sideline and just having to get the ball back over the net any way she can, that's not good. But, you know, 6-0 is terrific. And Friday night, we're going to play the defending national champions.
Well, that's not fair either.
and a team that's already lost once. They got beat by Penn State the other night. So Stanford comes in 4-1. This will be a very interesting night. This
be a sellout, won't it?
One of those stuff-huff nights. I can't imagine it won't be. What more could you put into it? You know, the defending national champions are coming. It's our former coaches coming. And our team has a new coach, and we are undefeated. Boy, that's got all the makings of filling up the gym, doesn't it?
I got some family members who want to go. I'm going to get over there Tuesday and see if I can get some tickets. I mean, I don't think you want to wait until the day of the game.
Yeah, lots of young players being used by Coach Thomas, but it's the veterans that are getting the job done for them.
Well, before you can ask me a question, I'm going to ask you one.
What's that?
How many football games is Illinois going to win this year? That's all I'm hearing. Does this game indicate, does this win over Ball State indicate one way or the other?
I don't know. I was thinking, I enjoyed the game. I got, my daughter got invited up to the Chancellor's box for the game, and she went to the Open tennis tournament out in New York. So she turned that spot over to me. So I had Joe DeLuce and I went. I was his date.
Okay.
So we sat up in the Chancellor's box, and we just sat there and just tried to enjoy it and to analyze. And I must tell you that I was thinking during the game, if we don't win this game, we may not win another game. And I hate to think that way, but we've got some, you know, South Florida's good, the Western Kentucky's good, and you know what the Big Ten is. Indiana, I mean, how many passes is that guy going to complete against us if they continue to use that?
Well, I watched Purdue lose to Louisville.
Yeah.
And I know Indiana, I saw Indiana lose to Ohio State.
Yeah.
But they played pretty well. I mean, they just didn't roll over and play dead by any means. I mean, Purdue was really in that game. Purdue's tough. Now, Louisville's got a quarterback for the, you know, forever. I mean, Jackson was terrific, and I think he was really determined to throw the ball and to show everybody he can throw, because we know he can run, and everybody's going to try to stop the run and force Louisville to pass. I think that's obvious. But what was that score? It was like 35-28 something, 34-20 something like one touchdown win for Louisville against Purdue, yeah. and Louisville's a pretty good team, and I just thought, oh boy. Ed Bond's back at it again, isn't he?
Yeah, he has found a picture that's yellowing with age and has put it online. Thanks, Ed. But, it's hard to know, but as you look at what the other teams have done, we know who the strong teams are. But even the teams as you look at the schedule, you say, well, if we're going to win six, we've got to win this, and... And
we're going to have to win every close game.
Yeah, yeah.
Rutgers, Purdue, Indiana are going to have to win those games. That's all there is. And Western Kentucky. And Western Kentucky lost some really good players off last year's team. They had an outstanding team last year, but they lost three key linemen on the offensive side. They lost both top receivers, and they lost their running back, who had, you know, over 20 touchdowns. And I don't want to say they're totally rebuilding, because Mike White, the quarterback, is back, and his name is Mike White, and I have no relation, by the way, but he had a good game in the opener, but they didn't kill Eastern Kentucky. They won the game handily, but they didn't. You know, I just think Illinois got a chance in that game. I mean, I definitely feel like we got a chance. A lot of things have to be corrected. The corners played way too soft. And we need a better pass rush, and maybe it isn't available. Maybe they can't. But there were some strange things that happened before the game ever started, Jim, that kind of had me wondering. First of all, the benching of Boyd and DeLauro, and then the fact that Crawford didn't play. Both lines were kind of jumbled, and maybe they can straighten that out this week.
Yeah, let's talk about that in a moment here. Let's go to Alan. Hello, Alan.
Morning, guys. I was at the game, of course, and I saw some good things and some bad things. Oh, by the way, Lauren, how long is Crawford out? Does anybody have an idea?
I'm told it's 3 weeks, but Lovey didn't say, and of course he can change his mind. He could let him play this week, or he could hold him out for 3 weeks. I don't know. He's very evasive on that type of thing, and we really don't know for sure.
Okay, going back to the game, our offensive line and defensive line still pretty weak, although I thought the defensive line got better late in the game. I don't know if we was wearing Ball State down or not, but what I saw in the third quarter was really disheartening. But we come out of it.
Yeah, that third quarter, they had the ball the whole time.
Oh yeah, I mean, and we couldn't do anything. Magerson couldn't stop the defensive end. He stops, I think, got sacked about three times in a row. That just killed one rally. Well, one half one time, but we're still pretty weak there. We scored all of our touchdowns on fairly short drives. I'm just afraid we're not an 80-yard drive team yet. Maybe we will be, but we're not now.
I will say this about Illinois' offense. They have got some really good receivers, including Dudek, yes, obviously, and Malik Turner. And they need to get the ball to those guys more, because
right,
that's their strength of their offense, I think. Now, their running game, they only netted 71 yards. I liked what I saw of Epstein. I just thought it was kind of Kendrick Foster seemed like every time he carried the ball, it seemed like he was stacked up before he could even get started. I don't know that it was his fault. I just don't think he had it.
I thought, Crouch did pretty well. He made some good throws. He threw the ball better than I've seen him throw or thought he might do. He needs to be a little more accurate. But, guys, Dutek was our best player 3 years ago. He's still our best player, and Mark Tupper is really upset that he only got two passes. I can't say as I blame him.
Yeah, well, as I said, they've got to get the ball to he and Turner both. And Smalling is a good receiver, too. And, I mean, there just wasn't much offense, either running or passing, when you come right down to it. That the two punt returns by Dudek were special, though, weren't they?
Yes.
One was called back, but, boy.
We didn't have that many plays on offense, Lauren. I think Ball State had 66 plays, and we had 38 or something that.
Yeah,
almost got doubled.
Yeah, I know. It didn't look good. It doesn't look good for the future, but they are young, and sometimes, you know, hopefully they'll get a lot better.
Well, Stanley Green being fired because of a targeting thing, right?
Well, only for a half. I mean, he wasn't allowed to play in the first half. I don't know why he didn't play in the second half.
I would think he's got to help him.
Yeah, I guess so, although I think he's behind Williams at safety. And I think they feel that Stanley Green's a good tackler, but maybe not such a good pass defender. They like Williams. They've liked Williams all along in practice. Now, look, maybe they put Williams in there and knowing that Stanley Green couldn't start the first game anyway. Maybe they knew that. I mean, not maybe. Obviously, they knew it. But maybe that's why Williams was given so much work right from the start of practice, because Williams has been a starter back there all season. And we didn't know much about We didn't know much about him coming from California. I mean, I didn't know a thing about him.
Is Kramer out for the season?
I don't know. I
didn't look very good.
No, but I don't think he's out for the season, but I don't know. But I sure think Allegretti will be the center this week, I would think. We'll see. We're going to talk to Levy at noon today, so we'll find out.
Okay. Apologize, guys.
Thank you, Alan. We're at 356-9397. Our text line is 351-5357. It looked to me like Dudek was a marked man. They knew about him, and it looked to me like it was, if you can double team, they had one guy right up on him, and then they had another guy waiting.
Yeah.
And
wouldn't you do that? I mean, defensively. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think we're going to run into that all year.
In fact, that's what Ohio State said it when the game was over. They said Indiana has one receiver that we can't cover, so we're going to double team him from the half on. They did. He didn't catch any passes, and they got beat because of just one guy, a taller guy, and a guy that he just kept getting open, and that's why they looked so good early in that game.
Let me tell you how good Dudek is. He caught a punt and was hit simultaneous with a terrific blow when he failed to call for a fair catch and held on to that ball.
Mm-hmm.
How many guys could have held on to the ball? The touchdown pass he caught in the end zone was a guy draped on him. I mean, he wasn't open.
No,
he just caught the ball.
And the guy kind of had his hands on the ball as well. It was a fight for the ball.
I mean, the guy is a terrific player, but, I mean, somebody else has got to step up. They have to, because if they're going to double team him, that means that a lot of other guys are going to be in single coverage. And
I think Turner's got great possibilities.
Yeah, and so does Smalling. Yeah. You, and I'll tell you another guy that they didn't use, but they will when they realize Dorsey, the tight end, is really good as a pass receiver. And I mean, like, really, really good. Did you see that one-handed catch he made on that terrible pass from Chase Crouch? I mean, if Crouch throws him the ball where he can catch it, he scores a touchdown. He had to dive way up in the air and catch it one-handed and fall backwards. But I think the strength of their team is the receivers. And they've got to figure out a way to take best advantage of them. And I think, by the way, Epstein caught two nice passes out of the backfield. He's not bad doing that either.
Yeah, he had 11 carries in the game. Seemed like he had more, but 54 yards. And you mentioned Foster had only eight carries. And
every time he carried the ball,
yards.
It seemed he was stacked up.
Yeah.
He couldn't get to the line of scrimmage.
Let's take our first break here, Ed, at 9:18. It's 72 degrees on this Labor Day. Anybody up yet this morning?
A lot of people celebrating last night.
Driving to work today, I saw two cars. I said, what am I doing out here in this twilight zone? You know? We'll take this a break. We're coming right back. We're doing our Monday morning quarterbacking. We invite you to jump right in. We're back on our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. We go to Jim. Hello, Jim.
Hey, hi, Jim and Lauren. I was wondering if you guys knew our record when we had Mendenhall and LeSure. And one of the things I'm asking for is that, because it seems like in recent years, our inability to run the ball and our inability to stop the run has really plagued us.
Well, there's no question. I mean, I think a lot of that's line play. I mean, it's okay to talk about Mendenhall and LeSure because they're outstanding rushers. But I don't think anybody. I just used Kendrick Foster's situation Saturday. There wasn't anything he could do. I mean, he ran up the line and was stacked. Mendenhall. Let's see. LeSure's great year was 2010, and that year, let's see what Illinois' record was. 7-6. That's the year we beat Baylor in the bowl game down in Texas. Houston, by the way, that game was played in Houston, Texas. Now the other you ask about Mendenhall.
Yes.
Okay, he played in barely played in 2005, and he played more than 6, and then 7 was his big year, his junior year, and of course that's the year we went 9-4.
Yeah, and did they both leave before their 4 years were up?
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
That's what I thought. I agree totally. I think our O-line made them even better, but I thought they were very bruising running backs, and I'm really liking Epstein. I think he bodes well for our future, and I would like to see us able to, like, Ball State really outgained us on the ground tremendously, and
171-71.
Yeah, and when the MAC team can outgain you on the ground, and I'm afraid when the Big Ten gets here, that's not going to be so good for us. So, anyway, I just kind of was wondering if we could tally up the wins and losses during the Mendenhall and LeSure years. To see how we did when we had bruising running backs.
Well, I think they contributed tremendously, although in 2007 you had John Osamoah was an outstanding guard, and you had Martin O'Donnell, who was an All-American at the other guard, and you had Xavier Fulton, I think, who's still playing up in Canada, and you had Akeem Millington at the other tackle. That was a pretty good team, a pretty good line.
Right.
And the line makes all the difference in the world, and you just can't run in, you know, runners can't run in, when there's no place to go.
Yeah, and I think our O-line has some things to work on. But thank you for taking my call.
I appreciate it. In that third quarter, we had 2 3 and outs. I think that was it.
You bet. Yeah, that's it. And a couple of those were passes. Our time of possession was practically nil.
Let's go to Bill. Hello, Bill.
Hey, how you guys? How you doing? I got some questions on the offensive line.
Yeah.
I thought it was just got blowed up by a MAC team, just like everybody else has said. I watched all the other Big Ten games, and what happened? I mean, did he bench somebody or something on the offensive line?
Well, they benched two players to start the game for one quarter. They benched Boyd, guard tackle. He's playing guard now, the freshman. And they also benched DeLauro after, I believe, 31 consecutive starts. DeLauro's having some leg problems that have really slowed him down. And I'm not sure what his status will be this week because he missed a bunch of practice early because of the leg problem. And I don't know what his status is.
And it looked like Mike Epstein's about a step faster than Corbin. Is that the starting running back?
No, Kendrick Foster.
Kendrick Foster, it looks a little heavy to me. So without the offensive line blocking better, they're going to be in the backfield. So, I mean, the offensive line, they're the key as far as I'm concerned. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hello. Since we have the receivers are a big strength, do you think it might be better to go with a better passing quarterback? Jeff George.
I think they're playing the right quarterback. I think Crouch is the right guy. Now, you haven't got to see George, and he is a. If you're just going to take passing entirely, he might be comparable or better. I think most people feel he's a better passer than Crouch, but Crouch gives you the ability to scramble and pass, scramble and run, and hopefully with a little more experience, he's a hard worker, and he's a leader on the team. I wouldn't give up on Crouch yet.
Yeah, a lot have to do with how you're able to read the defenses,
absolutely,
how you're able to run the team, leadership qualities, and all those kinds of things. We don't know how any other quarterback can do. We know what Crouch can do, but passing is not the only thing.
No. Yeah, I would agree that scrambling is very important based on how our offensive line blocked in the first game.
Yeah,
it saved Chase Crouch a few times.
It doesn't help the offensive line when, first of all, you don't start two starters, then you have your center go down at the start of the second quarter, the very beginning. He only played one quarter plus a couple plays. Kramer, he's been the center all this time. They're trying to get some coordination, and all of a sudden you lost your center. So you got to take Allegretti and move him to center. And then you got Solomon in the ball game, and he's been playing back up the entire time. I mean, there's no – you got to give him time, I guess. I mean, I'm as discouraged as you are about the performance, but I think there are maybe some reasons beyond just the simple fact that we're not good enough. But with time, you've got to get coordination with an offensive line. People preach that all the time, Jim. I mean, you've got to work together. It's a cohesive five guys, and what we have right now is a jumble. We're moving – all these guys have played so many different positions.
The other thing is you could, you know – keep a tight end in to help the left tackle.
Well, they did that. They did that a lot. You know, they had McGrew in there, you know, and Eckert, both. I mean, those guys are good blockers. Those are tough guys, but they're not the receiver that Dorsey is. So you got that problem of your best receiver is not your best blocker, okay?
Right. Yeah, just when I watched replays of the game, there were times the left tackle was on his own, and he couldn't even block the guy kept on getting pressure on Crouch.
Yeah, Winbush. Yeah, mm-hmm. Winbush was getting in there. You're right. Winbush beat DeLauro, and he also beat the other tackle.
He beat Allegretti. They put Meganson. They put Meganson.
Meganson was the other tackle. Yeah, Allegretti was at center then. Meganson missed him. I think Meganson would be a really good guard.
Yes.
And the problem is we got all guards. And some of them have to play tackle.
Sounds like the basketball team. We got all guards there, too.
I thought they did a decent job run blocking, though. And when Epstein was in there.
Yeah, well, there were a few plays, yeah. But, I mean, overall, I mean, if you average 71 yards a game rushing, you'll finish last in the nation.
Yeah, but I don't think they had that many attempts, though, too.
No, that's true. That's a good point. They didn't have a lot of attempts. I could get you the number of attempts, and it was a low number. Let's see, rushing attempts, 30. Ball State had 51.
Yeah, but 71 on 30 is not good. I think 51. Epstein, he seemed like when he got the ball, he was able to average about 5 yards a rush or so.
Yeah, after that first 8-yard loss, he was thrown for a loss on the first time he was in the game. It was 8 yards, and so after that, he gained about 54 yards.
Yeah,
netted.
I'm still, you know, obviously this is a tough year. Hopefully, they can find a way to get 6 wins. But you got to feel good about how good these freshmen are, and just having a coach that you know, you don't have to worry about them getting fired. You know, the AD supports them. Things are going in the right direction, but it's going to be a tough year at times.
No doubt about that. It's a long pull. A lot of patience is going to be required. We've been preaching that
for a lifetime.
Hey, we're very good as Illini fans. We're very good at being patient.
Yes, we are. Hey, thanks. Appreciate the call, Tom.
Yep.
We're at 356-9397. Our text line is 351-5357. It's 9:33, 74 degrees. We'll take a little break right here. We're coming right back. We're back in our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate. We're talking mostly about Illinois' 24-21 win over Ball State on Saturday and some of the things that happened there. Mikey Dudek's long punt return and Leak Turner had four receptions in that game, including a 25-yarder. He made a pretty good open field move after he caught that ball.
Oh, didn't he? That was really exciting, those two plays back-to-back. But, you know, I want to say one thing about Dudek's punt return, the last one. You know, they were punting to the corner, and it was a running-type punt where he just punted it low and bounced it down there. And the lead guy to go down on, to cover the punt was trying to keep the ball from going in the end zone and ran right by Dudek before the ball got there. He was behind Dudek. Hmm. The reason Dudek was able to break out is because the two defenders who were supposed to, you know, down the ball didn't realize he was going to grab it off the ground and take it, you know, off the bounce and take off. And so he had a wide open to start to that play because they ran past him.
And we go to Peter. Hello, Peter.
How you doing? Thanks for doing a good job, guys. I got a question about the camera coverage of the game. Why is it whenever they show the linemen or the game, their angles are so far away, you can't read the numbers of the players? And it's really difficult when you watch other games in the league. You know, they have the camera angles set up so that you can easily see the players, the numbers, you know, things like that. Why are the camera angles so different for the Illini games?
I didn't know that they were. It's the same, you know, same people are doing all these games, ESPN people and the Big Ten Network people.
Well, did you watch the Nebraska game?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, watch any other game in the college ranks, in the Big Ten, and the camera angles are close up. So that you can, when they're on the line, you can easily read their numbers, see the names on the backs, and you can tell who's playing. But every time I watch an Illini game, and this goes back, you know, a year or so.
You're just talking about watching it on TV, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I think the Illini did had a good game, but I'm just talking about the camera angles are so different when you watch an Illini game.
Well,
and I just wondered, can anybody explain to me why they have this really far off camera angle?
Oh, I don't think we can explain it to you. You're going to have to find out from them, I guess. I don't know. I really don't know.
No, check it out when you watch the games. Check it out. And,
well, I watch the game from the press box. I don't watch it at home.
No, but I mean, when you watch another Big Ten game, check it out and see what I'm talking about. You'll notice.
Okay, well, it would have to do with where the cameras are placed and the, you know, the location and the angle, I guess, if indeed that's happening. I think that's the first time we've heard that kind of complaint. Maybe it's happening, Matt, but we haven't discovered. You know, when you're at home, you're usually watching somebody else and not Illinois.
Yeah, it's a question I'm just trying to get answered. You
okay,
know?
Well, we'll
check it out next time.
If anybody has any idea about that or knows more than we do, we'll give them a chance to talk about it. Thank you, Peter. Let's go to Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hey, good morning, guys. I was just wondering, I didn't really hear anybody talk about it. I didn't see it mentioned in the papers, but the last play of the game, the field goal, I don't know what the referee who's standing there looking right at the play was looking at, but the Illinois guy destroyed the kicker for Ball State. I mean, absolutely, basically tackled his
if
leg
you
in half.
If you block the kick, you can hit the kicker.
No, you cannot. What are you talking about, Warren? You cannot tackle the kicker if the kick is blocked. It doesn't matter. That's been a rule forever. I mean, that's what is roughing the kicker? I mean, he didn't block it.
If you block it,
he didn't block. The guy who tackled him didn't block it.
If you block a punt, you can hit the punter.
if the guy who did it, yes, the guy who initially makes contact did, but the guy who tackled the kicker at Ball, for Ball State wasn't the guy who blocked it. It was blocked by the man in the line of scrimmage. Two different things.
Okay. Come at me again on this. You're saying that a different player than Milan, who blocked the field goal, hit the kicker?
Right. The guy who rushed off the edge.
Oh,
the edge rusher.
I understand what you were saying.
He destroyed the kicker. And I looked at the official. He's looking right at him. I'm like, wait a minute. They should kick him again 15 yards closer. But the game just ended. Boom. That's the end of it. I couldn't believe that.
Well, I missed that entirely. Okay.
Yeah, if you see the replay, just look at the last play, and then it's really hard to believe. But anyway, and I was looking at the point spread for the next game. I couldn't believe that Western Kentucky is an 8-point favorite over Illinois already. That's kind of stunning. It's that big.
No. They've been that much of a favorite all summer. I mean that Illinois is basically an underdog in every other game this season except. The Purdue game and the Rutgers games are going to be very close.
Right. Okay. Oh, and the last thing I want to mention was, did you see there was the biggest point spread in upset in history this past weekend?
UCLA?
Howard.
Howard, UNLV. Yeah. Right,
yes,
right.
44 points.
Over UNLV. Yeah, did you see what happened in the UCLA game? UCLA threw five touchdown passes in the last 17 minutes. Five touchdown passes in the last 17 minutes to win 45-44.
Yes, incredible. All right.
How did you win the game, they asked. He said, well, we kicked the extra point.
In the meantime, at USC, they used a blind long snapper. Did you see that?
I read about it.
I don't know the entire background, but this kid's been associated with the team for a real long time. He is blind. He had on the full uniform and everything. He had another guy holding him by the shoulder, taking him out to. He's obviously practiced this because the snapback was perfect. And
when they snap, do they look? The snappers aren't looking when they actually snap.
I don't. Not ordinarily, but I think maybe they look back when they're snapping it to the on that kind of a play. If they're just snapping it back to a guy in a shotgun formation or something like that, I don't think they do. I don't know, but it didn't. I don't know which way this guy's head was pointed or anything, but he snapped it back perfectly, and of course he got a rousing ovation, and it was
terrific.
Yeah, really a nice thing for him, and I'm not sure what his entire background is, but they said he'd been associated with the team for a real long time. I don't know if he'd been a manager or what, but amazing. It's a 9:45. Phone lines open 356-9397. It's 75 degrees, going up to 90 today, then back down in the 70s for the rest of the week is what it looks like. September is among the most popular months to get married. Before you walk down the aisle, Busey suggests setting a solid financial footing. Experts suggest the following tips for financial intimacy. Will you and your spouse-to-be keep finances separate or combined? Consider individual spending and saving habits. Making this decision together will help you find a system that works. Couples that tackle money problems together and take responsibility for solving them will find that their relationship is better for it. Calculate the monthly costs and choose how bills will be paid. Who will write the checks? Monitor investments and take care of taxes. Share credit. Let your spouse-to-be know your credit situation and vice versa. And decide how much you want to save as a couple and withdraw the funds automatically from your paychecks. Be realistic when budgeting your monthly savings goal. Use Busey's eBank for your online banking needs or utilize their free budgeting tool. When you're just starting out, Busey can provide an array of solutions tailored to your specific needs. Keep and manage all of your accounts in one place with five lines of business: personal, mortgage, business, cash management, and wealth management. No matter your life, your stage in life, Busey will be there along the way. Visit Busey.com or stop by one of their many convenient locations for solutions to your personal, business, and wealth management needs. We're at 356-9397. We need to talk about Trey Watson a little bit in this game. He had a terrific game, a couple of takeaways, made a lot of tackles. He had a terrific game.
Finished up last season on the upswing, making a lot of tackles, and I thought that Illinois lost Hardy Nickerson, and basically replaced him with Watson, except that Phillips, Deshaun Phillips, who was a JC transfer, had 16 tackles in the game. The two linebackers had 28 tackles between them, the two middle linebackers, and it looks to me like that's a pretty solid position. I thought maybe before Hanson was hurt, it was Illinois' best position. I've swung over to the receivers now, but Watson's a good player, Jim, and he's in the right spot at the right time. But still, just imagine this: the secondary, all the returning members of the secondary. We had 10 starters last year in the secondary. None of them on the team this year, and including the freshman, obviously, in the secondary, have ever made an interception. Not one of our players playing in the secondary has ever made a college interception. Watson got one as a linebacker. And that's great, but we need Al Broski to pop up out here one of these days, don't we?
Yeah, we.
He still holds the NCAA record.
And how many was that?
Well, it was 28 and 30 games, or 30 and 28 games. Which was it, Jim? I forget. The numbers were 30 and 28 in any case, and he had 16 consecutive games with interceptions, and that's a lot.
Of all the stats, when you look back on them, that's one of the most amazing ones.
They'll never break it, will they?
I can't imagine.
Nobody's ever going to do that. No. It just doesn't happen. And you know the other part about that? They didn't throw near as much in those days. Broski played back in the early 50s. I mean, they weren't throwing the football around a lot. But he had a...
That's why they throw it. He intercepted it.
Right, and you had your good friend Herb Nethery, and my good friend Stan Wallace were the cornerbacks on that team, and he was a roving safety. It was a three-man line. It was a 6-3. We had a six-man line and two linebackers and two cornerbacks and a safety. It's not like a four-man deep like it is today, because they had to go four deep because there's so much more passing now. But here's a guy playing safety between Wallace and Nethery, and getting all those interceptions when they were throwing very few balls. Some things you just can't account for.
Al Broski. Western Kentucky, the last caller was talking about, they beat Eastern Kentucky 31-17 Saturday, and they were 11-3 last year. They have a new coach. His name is Mike Sanford, and they are indeed the favorite in the game. And we'll be the underdog in South Florida, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, a big underdog against South Florida. They're top 25. So it's going to be a tough sledding. But I'm not encouraged by what I saw, but I just think that there are some assets on the team. I hope they can take advantage of them. You got to hang on to the ball more. We should have a better running attack. We got to crouch. We got a quarterback that can run. We've got some running backs that can run. We've got some receivers that can catch. We just need to create the space and call the right plays maybe and get them open.
We have one text here I didn't get to yet. The text writer says, I find the rap music played at the Atlanta games offensive. I want it retired immediately. He's using the word retired because that's what the university used with regard to the war chant. Also, I'm confused about the purpose and the intent of the video board. Is it primarily for the fans or the players?
Well, it's for the fans.
Well, I can't imagine the players looking up at the video board very much.
No, no.
They got plenty of things to do down on the field, don't they?
You bet.
So let's go to the phones for Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hi, guys. Love your show. It's a long summer to get through without Monday morning quarterbacks, and now that you're back, all is well with the world.
Well, you're very kind. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that I was very disappointed with the crowd Saturday. it was my understanding that many members of the university community did not feel welcome with the war chant being played. And now that the war chant is no more, I was looking for a walk-up crowd of 12,000 to 15,000.
Well, before you,
people came surging through the turnstile.
Before you get any more cynical, do you think the people that are against the chief, I'm saying the chief, attend the games?
Actually, Lauren, I don't.
I kind of doubt it, and that's a broad statement. Now, obviously, there are many people who attend the games who are anti-chief, but I think overall, most of those folks are not fans. I don't think they are.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see them Saturday night. Who knows?
Well, that's an exciting game. You got a really good team coming in here. It's a team that Illinois should be able to play with. They've lost key players off their ball club last year. I think a lot of when spreads are set, that's the margin of that Vegas sets on the games. A lot of that is based on last season.
Right.
And I just wonder if Western Kentucky is near that good. When you see the number of yards they've lost with their receivers, they had two great receivers. Both of them caught like 70-ish passes each. And that's 140 passes or more that they caught last year. And their running back had a whole bunch of touchdowns. I haven't checked the number again, but it's way up there. It might have been 30. And so those people are gone, and they're three top linemen. One of them was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they've lost some key guys, and usually players at that teams at that level can't sustain that when they lose key players. They have to rebuild. I hope.
Well, I'll be there watching.
Well, me too.
All right.
Appreciate
thanks,
the call.
Guys.
Thank you. Eric was wondering if we noticed the biggest point spread and upset in college football history. We talked about that. Howard beat UNLV and it was a 44-point underdog. And JB says, they say baseball needs to speed up play, but I think football is far worse. Why should it take 3.5 hours to play a one-hour game? Far too many TV timeouts, challenges, and reviews. Saturday's game was a boring waste of time, very little to get excited about. It takes a long time to play a game.
How would you speed it up, Jim?
Hmm.
I mean, you had that play where the guy, our player, Watson, falls on his butt, is picked up by Gay, one of his teammates, and he continues to run. Then he laterals it over to Jackson, and we score a touchdown. And the officials missed it, and they had to go to the replay to find out that he was down.
They never blew a whistle.
No. You've got to do the replay, don't you, to get it right? I mean, it reminds me that we played Pitt 1 year. You remember, you were working the game, I'm sure. We played Pitt 1 year, and in our backfield, a Pitt player came in and recovered a fumble on the ground, got up, and ran for a touchdown. Remember that? That decided that game, I think, was during the Mike White era. And the officials just missed it. And we had that lateral over to Ohio State that was clearly a forward lateral, and our guy runs for a touchdown, and the officials missed it. I think you have to use replay. I don't know how you're going to speed the game up. You can maybe make halftime 5 minutes shorter, or you can – what do you do?
I don't know. We seemed to get along okay with for a few years there with out replay.
Well, that's true. So are you against replay?
No, I'm not against replay. I think it's a good thing to get it right.
Yeah.
I do believe that.
It does take longer. But think of all the suspense and excitement during the time you're waiting to find out if the officials got it right or not. I don't know. I'm disturbed about the length of football. I'm disturbed about the length of baseball. It's just the thing that gets me about baseball, Jim, is the Cardinals will draw 40,000 people for a game or more. And it's a good game, and it's taken forever. And you look up, and the game is still close in the eighth inning, and half the people have gone home. It's 10 o'clock, Maude. We got to go. You know, we got to get up tomorrow. If a 7 o'clock game is going to run past 10 o'clock, there's something wrong with that. And I don't have an answer, although I think I've said for years, I think you could put a clock on the pitchers.
In the Open tennis tournament, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. The
Arthur Ashe Stadium holds 24,000 people. It's the biggest attendance arena any place in the world. And there's 20-some thousand people there. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. So I don't know. I was just sort of contrasting that to what you said about people getting up and leaving before the game is over. Those people don't. That's a nutty crowd. I mean, telling you.
You know, the thing about tennis is constant action.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no let up. You serve and you play till the point, and then you go right away and do it again. There's so much delay in other sports. Delay in the course of the game. There's all kinds of delay. I mean, you got to huddle, I guess. You can't just not. You got to have the time to huddle, and you got to have time to do all the thing. And if you throw a long pass, you got to wait for the ball to be brought back. And all the players you got those receivers running 50 yards down the field. They've got to have time to get back. I mean, I don't know how you do it, Jim. I guess there's a way. I know people are looking at it.
In tennis, they have a number of stoppages, but those are all challenges by the players. And those, you know, they think.
Well, those don't take very long.
Those don't take 30 seconds at max.
And they get it right.
Yeah. And there's another thing about tennis that every time I watch, guys are getting hurt. I got a bad shoulder, this and that. But here is a tournament going on in New York now. It lasts for 2 weeks. You have to win 7 matches to win the championship. Each of those matches is between 2 and 3 hours long, sometimes longer. And it's total, as you mentioned, it's total action. There's no hanging around. There's no taking a play off. And it's got to be the toughest championship of any that I can think of.
Now, the women play 3 sets.
They play 3 sets. That's
right. You think that's a better idea?
No, I think the
5 set gets you a winner, doesn't it?
5 sets. Yeah, you can play well for a real long time, and you can hit a bump, and the other person takes over for a while, and it's back and forth and back and forth. But I'm just talking about the physical and the mental part of this. We're out of time already here, Mr. Tate. This is the first hour. We'll come right back with after the CBS News with more of our Monday morning quarterbacking here on DWS.
It's time for some Monday morning quarterbacking here on News Talk 1400 DWS. You can reach us at 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line at 351-5357. Or you can email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are the Monday morning quarterbacks, Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate.
We're taking your calls and your text messages this morning. Here's a text that says the ref in the blocked field goal signaled that the ball was tipped, so running into the kicker is not called.
By the other player, huh?
Well, he didn't say by the other player.
Well, I mean, that's evidently what happened. I don't recall seeing that. I just saw the block. I didn't see that. But
here's Paul Huddle in Pasadena and says, I believe the guy who just called in about the block kick and another player hitting the kicker is wrong. When a pass or a kick is tipped or blocked, there is no pass interference or roughing the kicker, even if another player hits the receiver.
Okay. Okay, that could be the rule. I don't know.
I
knew you could hit the kicker, but I never seen it, the kicker hit by a different player. That's another part of the rule I'm familiar with.
And Bob says, guys, it's all about the TV commercials that slows the games. But accept it because they pay the bills, like it or not.
Well, there's no TV commercials between pitches. And if you put a 20-second clock on the pitcher, that would mean he'd have to throw the ball within 15 seconds, generally, to be safe. And that would speed up the game. Now, your visits to the mound are real simple. You just don't allow them. No visits to the mound. No catchers going out. No managers going out. You step out toward that pitcher, that's a ball. That's a ball. That'd solve it real quick.
Wouldn't it be great if we could play real competition in preseason football and basketball instead of a bunch of substandard teams? Because when you start playing big teams, you hit a brick wall, says Tom over in Summer Township. Let's go to Rick. Hello, Rick.
Yeah, hi, Jim and Lauren. 2 quick games that stick in my mind. when we were playing Michigan here, and there were two or three Illinois fumbles during the course of the game, and they were all right. recovered by Michigan. And I thought that was what got the replay ball rolling, that Coach Turner complained to the Big Ten.
Right.
And after that, that got the ball rolling. And I remember the referee afterwards, he was interviewing, he said, well, yeah, I think probably we got at least some or all of those wrong. And it seems like he had a French last name, like LaFontaine or something like that. And I think I see him once in a while calling games. But the other game that sticks in my mind, and I was there, was when the referee fainted or fell in the middle of the field during the game. And they brought, of course, a medical team on to work on him. And they just, of course, kept him there in the middle of the field. We're working on him. And there were like 30-some thousand people in the stands. It wasn't apropos for the band to play, and it was like 30,000 people completely quiet for 10 or 15 minutes, you know, watching this life or death drama in the middle of the field. Is just unbelievable. And I recall afterwards Mike White saying something like, well, we live and breathe football, but sometimes there are things that remind you like this, that there's some things more important in life than football.
Yeah, that referee, when he keeled over, died.
Yes, yeah, that's why I remember hearing that on the news later, that they said, well, he was dead when he hit the field. But those are just two of the games that kind of stick in my mind.
Yep, those are memorable games, all right. Thank you, Rick. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And we go to Dave. Hello, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for having a good show this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Just before making a comment about football, a shout out for volleyball. They went down to Louisville and cleaned house. That's pretty nice. You might comment on that. But
Hey, Dave, before you go any further, is Lou Henson going home tomorrow?
It's what?
Is Lou Henson going home tomorrow?
I think he's going home Wednesday.
Wednesday, okay. I had heard Tuesday. Lou fell. And he's been in Meadowbrook for a week or more, and he's doing fine. By the way, he had some pain in the back, and obviously it was a crushed vertebrae.
Yes.
And he's doing well. I just think he's got a lot of fans out there, and I think it's fair to report that he's doing really well and is going home this week.
Well, yeah. He certainly is. We play bridge out there with him a couple nights, and he's able to get around and get to the bridge table, and he. So he's in a wheelchair most of the time, but he's doing fine, and the people have been over to his house to tell Mary what, you know, kind of what to watch for and all that kind of stuff. So I think he's coming home Wednesday.
Hey, Dave, we did talk about volleyball earlier and about the big match coming up Friday night with Kevin Hamley coming back and so forth. And we have another, we're playing Colorado the next day, so.
Yeah, no, that's not going to be an easy weekend. I got what I expected out of the football game, except for one thing.
What was that?
I cannot imagine a kid doing something that caused him to be suspended before his first college football game. I hope we don't have a bunch of attitude.
Well, wait a minute. Who was suspended before his first college game?
Well, I think you said that one of the...
Crawford is a senior. He was suspended.
There were two kids suspended, weren't there?
No, not to my knowledge. Well, I mean, not to my knowledge. I mean, Lovey doesn't tell us this. That there were two linemen who didn't start because of reasons, but they were in the game to start the second quarter. That was... DeLauro and Boyd, but Crawford didn't play at all, and neither did Green. By the way, Green didn't play, but Green had a targeting penalty in the last half of the last game last year against Northwestern, which disqualified him for the first half of this game this year.
Oh,
okay. Now he was was available to play in the second half, but he didn't play. So I don't know. Maybe we'll find out from Lovey at noon today. Why he didn't play, I don't know the answer.
I just hope we don't have a bunch of attitude problems. I mean, I think these kids got a real chance to grow into something, and it's going to take, as somebody earlier said, a lot of patience. But I kind of think that they're on the right track, and they're working hard, and if they can play better pass defense, they might compete against Western Kentucky.
But well, they're going to throw the ball.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. And we go to Bob. Good morning, Bob.
Hello.
Hello, Bob.
Yes, I watched the replay Saturday night of the game, and the specific field goal attempt at the end of the game, it was very clear the official standing back there watching the play indicated that number 31 had tipped the ball before he ran into the kicker, and he was indicating that he had tipped it, and that's the reason that there was no penalty called.
Well, 55 is the one that blocked it.
He blocked it on the line, but number 31, Cameron
Watkins.
Yeah.
Watkins was the one that ran into the kicker.
Okay.
But immediately when Cameron actually touched the ball, when the guy kicked it, and that's what the official signaled. Immediately, you know, hit his hand, indicating that Cameron had touched the ball. Now,
oh no,
he didn't deflect it very far, obviously.
Well,
that's the reason if the penalty was not called.
You think that Cameron Watkins hit the ball?
The official obviously did, because he called it. If you watch the replay, you'll see the camera angle was such you could see the official standing back there, and immediately when Cameron either touched it or didn't touch it, the official indicated that he did touch the ball.
Okay, that's a new...
Here's a text from Rick who says, Cam Watkins annihilated the Ball State kicker. Milan's play saved his bacon.
Well, he did, but if he touched the ball, he had the right to hit the kicker.
Well, our caller earlier said that anybody can hit the kicker if you block the ball.
No, that's not true.
Okay. All right. We're getting different versions of this, and I don't
know. The rule book, somebody posted it on the Internet this morning, printed the rule book on there, and it says if it has to be the guy that touches the ball.
Okay.
That can hit the kicker.
Well, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that Cameron Watkins even came close to touching the ball. I didn't realize that.
Well, the replay you can't tell, but the official's standing right there looking at it, and he signals that he touched it immediately before he even actually hit the kicker. So.
Okay.
Watch the replay, you'll see that. And
okay.
All right. I was concerned about that, too, watching the game live. But if you watch the replay, the official very clearly indicates that Cameron did touch the ball.
All right. Okay, thank you.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. Right to 356-9397. The text line is 3515-357. And here is someone that says they have two questions. Is Steve Kelly back at the station? It was so good to hear his voice on Saturday. The answer to that is no. He's working on the football broadcasts, but he's not working here at the WDWS. What about the two-point try after the first touchdown? I'm surprised it's taken this long for somebody to bring that up.
Well, they had a deal. They have a backup quarterback who's number 14. Number 14 is Blake Hayes. He's a punter. He's also the holder. But they ran in the other 14 to trick him and throw a ball. And they had that planned. And they saw something in the film that gave them the idea that they could complete a pass on that play, and that's why they put the quarterback in there, Miller.
I don't think in the early start of a game, and the first touchdown you score, that you go for two.
Yeah, but if you make it, you're glad you did.
Yeah, but you know, you immediately.
Nobody does that, Jim.
Nobody does that. Yeah. I mean, I didn't even like it when the Zooks teams lined up that way every time.
Well, it didn't work, that's for sure. And it changed the game. I mean, even late, it had to go for two, late when the Crouch ran in, mm-hmm. because the team was only 1 point ahead. They would have been 2 points ahead. You'd kick the field goal, kick the extra point, I mean. But it changes the strategy of the game, no question.
It's I almost fell out of my seat when I saw it. I don't know if other people felt that strongly about it or not. I thought, you just can't do that. Nobody does that. And we go back to the phones for Joe. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. I thought the game was great. Took some risks that we usually don't do. I think the kids never gave up. They kept fighting, and that's new. And also, the Big Ten looked pretty tough. You look at Maryland, you look at Michigan, you look at Purdue.
Yeah.
The Big Ten this year is going to be something to look at because I think they're all pretty good, and anything could happen in the Big Ten. But I'm just glad Lovey is just taking risks and shaking it up and seeing what happens, because that's the only way you're going to develop these guys. And these freshmen don't know what they don't know, and they're just out there to play. So it was a great game. I thought it was exciting. I was there, and I was at the quarterback club, and I just thought that he's a quiet coach, but he's thinking, and his mind's working, and he's planning, and I think he really knows what he's doing. Thank you.
By the way, before you hang up, what did you think of – whoop, lost him. I wanted to ask him what he thought of Underwood at the quarterback club. Underwood spoke to the rebounders, the quarterback club. He spoke. I've seen him speak three times in the last week. He's really good. He's really good at the mic. The best thing he did, and I'm repeating myself here, but he's speaking from the stage at the rebounders affair. This is in the M Memorial Stadium on the third floor. And somebody popped up and says, okay, what kind of decorum are we going to have from the coach on the bench? And he looked at the guy, and he stepped down from the stage, went out, picked up a chair in the audience, took the chair, brought it all the way back to the stage, set it down, and sat in it. And the place went crazy. And then he said, until the first bad call. I mean, he hit a home run. He hit a grand slam three times. I listened to him, and I don't. Can he coach? You know, we'll find out. Does he have enough good basketball players?
He can coach. The question is, does he have the players?
Right. We don't know if he has the players, but his job in dealing with the fans is just unbelievable. In fact, I've seen him four times because he was also on the Monday sports show last Monday. You know, the afternoon show at Scotty's Brew House. And he's just really good in dealing with that. His PR stuff is really good. Now, he had a couple of really good players in here. Landers Nolly was in this past weekend. He's a 6'6 guard out of Georgia, formerly out of Chicago, so they have that Chicago connection. And he also had Colin Castleman here from Florida, 6'10 guy. And they're putting a big push on. They don't have any commitments yet, Jim. No basketball commitments at this point.
I read in Sports Illustrated this week about the way the recruiting has changed and the number of offers that are being made.
Isn't that ridiculous?
It really is. Offering 30 guys is commonplace now.
Yeah, you got to. I counted 35, and I didn't even know about one of the guys that Illinois had offered. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I don't have the right number, but I know it's way over 30. But in saying that, 10 of those, let's say about 12 of those now, have committed to other schools. Mm-hmm. So even though you've got 30-some offers out, you've really only got 20-some because a lot, and really some of those guys aren't going to visit. So it boils down to still a handful of guys that you can get.
And, well, yeah, some of those players are on everyone's list.
That's exactly right.
That's how you get those.
Some players have 30
offers. A great number of players on your list is just offer the best guys.
Yeah, the question keeps coming up, and we all wonder about it. What do you do if let's say you make 35 offers? Well, that means you've got a number one guy and a number 35 guy, right? Mm-hmm. What if the 35 guy says he wants to come? What do you do? Mm-hmm. You really don't.
So I'll call you back.
10:23, we take this break. We're at 356-9397. The text line is 351-5357. Coming back right after this. Welcome back to our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. We're at 356-9397. The Cathell Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. At the U.S. Tennis Championships, former Illini Kevin Anderson has reached the quarterfinals. He has had a terrific year. Sam Querrey, an American, also in the quarters, and they play each other. Querrey is now the number one ranked United States men's player. Venus Williams is still alive in the quarterfinals, and she's got three or four other, I can't remember exactly how many, other United States women still in the running. So this is a big year for Americans in their own tournament. And best of luck to Kevin Anderson. This is the best year he's had for a real long time. He had all those injuries. His ranking went way up, and now he's down. He got seeded in the tournament at 28. And if you can get in the top 30 seeds, you have a pretty good chance of playing unranked players and maybe some qualifiers and others in the early rounds. But nonetheless, he's played some good people, and our congratulations to him. He plays Querrey again. I don't know if that's today or tomorrow. We go to Al. Hello, Al.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Just tuned in. Forgot about you this morning. I don't know how I could do that. But
hey, Al, what's the matter with you? You missed a lot of good stuff.
Well, I thought Labor Day you guys might be sleeping in, so I was wrong.
No, this is Labor right here.
We're sleeping in on the show. Right. How's that?
There you go. Pretty fortunate Saturday. I thought the most deserving team didn't win. Third quarter was brutal. I'm critical of defense coordinator. I was last year as well. We're just not aggressive enough, easy to play against. I just don't get why he doesn't get after quarterbacks. He did when the game was online in the fourth quarter, and we got a pick because we sent some people. And Ball State got after Chase Crouch, and that's why he had the unfortunate success that he had, was because Ball State was bringing people and forcing some quick throws and some sacks. But I don't know. Unless he decides to start getting after people, I think it's going to be a long year. I don't get it. And Dudek's got to touch the ball more than two times. Bubble screens, revert anything, get the ball in his hands. But we were very, very fortunate to win that football game. But I know, I understand they're young, but these coordinators got to. I'm not sure they get it, guys. And man, it's frustrating to watch at times. So those are my comments. I'll hang up and listen, but I'll be there Saturday night. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Al. Appreciate your call. Well, I agree with the part about Dudek getting the ball. I don't care how they figure out how to get it to him, but it to him.
You got
to
do it. That's why they put him back as a returner on punts. They want to get him the ball in his hands in an open field. And I don't know why.
Couldn't we have a reverse or a play like that?
Well, they've got the plays in. I just, you know, they only ran 30-some plays, I guess. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know, 30-some running plays, that is. And that's an awfully small number. I'm looking back at that number. We threw 19 passes and threw and had 30 rushes, so that's 49 plays. That is really low, extremely, extremely low number of plays. But I agree. I mean, they got to find ways. And I'm sure they realize it, Jim. They're going to get the ball to him. I'm sure they'll make that a point of emphasis. But it's on the same time, if I'm playing defense, it's a point of emphasis to me to put two people on him and make sure he doesn't get it. So
I think if you look at that defensive lineman of Ball State, you'll see that second guy fading to his side every time. We need to take a break, Mr. Bond. It's 10:32, coming back right after that. Welcome back to our Monday morning quarterback show. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. We're at 356-9397. The Cathell Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357.
This texter says, love listening to the Monday morning quarterbacks. Did Lovey explain their thinking regarding going for two on the point after touch after the first touchdown? Terrible for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, he explained it.
What,
he talked about
say?
It.
Oh,
well, he said that they saw something that led them to believe that they could complete a pass, and they knew that number 14 was the holder, so they changed Hayes, who was wearing 14, with Cam Miller, who was also wearing 14, Cam Miller being the fourth string quarterback, and they brought him in to hold in order to throw the pass. They thought they could trick him, you know, by using Miller instead of Hayes, and they thought that they saw something where this guy would be open, and he wasn't open. That's all. I mean, it was a planned deal. It wasn't something that they did on the spur of the moment. They brought him in off the bench for that purpose. They had no intention of kicking the extra point when they came out on the field.
Boo.
Well, it's a play. You know, it didn't work.
I know it. Do you think it would give a team some emotional lift to know that they had 8 points instead of seven?
I mean, that early in the game wouldn't make any difference at all. I wouldn't change any of the strategy of any kind.
But 8 points is not going to win the game. It's not going to be an 8-7 game or something like that.
No, they saw something. They thought it would work. That was the same thing Zook used to say. If we saw what we were looking for, they've got their own idea, studying film, that this play will work if such and such happens. And what happens is that they line up a certain way, and then when the play breaks out, players move to different places, and they evidently covered what was their weakness.
Text, Watkins was also pushed in the back by a Ball State lineman. That can negate roughing the kicker.
And that's the fourth explanation we've had.
Another guy says, Bob is correct. Watson tipped the ball before Milan blocked it.
I'll be darned.
We got a... First of all, we'd like to hear from a referee who watched the game and watched the replay of the thing and tell us what happened there.
Yeah.
Because we've had several different people talk about it. Evidently, there was two Illini, at least, involved in the thing. And I didn't know, and I didn't care once I saw it was blocked. All right.
Well, when I talked to Milan, he had no idea that anybody else blocked it. He thought he blocked it.
I know it. He was the one that jumped up and was...
Well, it hit him right in the arm. He had a bruise on his arm.
He said, good bruise.
Yeah.
Well, but you don't get good bruises on your cars. You get big gashes and get them bent in, and then when that happens, you got to call Gallo Miller Paint and Collision Repair. This is a full-service collision repair facility. They know that having a car accident is a very serious matter, and choosing the best collision repair specialist is also very, very serious. Dave Miller and Bill Gallo are passionate about their business. They really care about it. That's one of the reasons they put their last names on the business. Miller, Gallo, Gallo, Miller. This marks their 14th year in business, and during that time they've repaired, it's about 15,000 vehicles. Hands-on kind of guys. You go out there looking for them. They're back in the shop every day. Not all owners of collision repair shops are like that, that's for sure. Sometimes you go out there and you can't even find them. But one thing they wanted me to tell you is that they work with all the insurance companies to ensure that your vehicle is returned to factory safety specifications, all back with a written lifetime warranty. They know the business inside and out. They know what a hassle having your car repaired can be, and a collision repair shop is the last place you want to be, even though they have a very nice place. And easy to find, too, conveniently and centrally located in Champaign-Urbana. You just look for their attractive building. It's on the south side of I-74. It's between the Neal Street and Prospect exits. For more information, visit their website at www.gallimiller.com. Roger is next. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Jim. I am a football official.
Okay.
Replay right now, but I watched the play, and the only person that's absolved from contact, of course, as they said, is the one that touches the ball. Now, whether the number 31 got a fingertip on it or not, I couldn't tell you. But the referee, there's two things can happen. The referee can get some help from somebody else and come in and say, are you sure that 31 touched that ball? You know, we had such and such touching it. Or he can get on the PA and announce that there's no roughing the kicker penalty because the ball was touched. Now, that brings replay into it. And replay can look at it then. So,
well, what if 31 was blocked into the kicker by a Ball State blocker?
If he's blocked into the kicker, I think he's absolved. Yeah.
Okay. That's one of the explanations that we're getting. I don't know if that happened or not.
I don't think so. He pretty much ran in there untouched. To me, like,
okay,
somebody may have grazed him or something, but.
So you think he touched the ball before, the official thinks he touched the ball before Milan did, huh?
Well, he gave that signal. Now, maybe he didn't know. You know, maybe he thought that was the kid that got it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's watching the kicker and the holder there, and all of a sudden, here's the ball coming back. So sometimes somebody else has to help him and come and say, hey, that wasn't the guy that touched the ball.
Okay, thank
you. Evidently, nobody did. But if he gets on and announces that there was no roughing the kicker because the ball was touched, now replay can get involved.
Hmm. With everybody charging out on the field, boy, that'd be something, wouldn't it?
We're going to do this play over at the end of the game.
This happened once years ago with Ohio State.
I know. Yep. I know it can happen, and now
you
get
to bring everybody back out of the locker room, didn't they?
Yeah, in this case, you just missed a referee, then they just walk off the penalty, and the guy gets to try a kick again, right?
That's correct.
Well, there have been a lot of sleepless nights if that had happened and gone through. Well, of course, we'd have been in overtime then. Just what we needed in a screwy game like that with so many different things.
Hey, Roger, thank you. That helps explanation, at least. We know what the rule is.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Back to the calls after this break. We're back on our Monday morning quarterback show, the first one since last year. And Roger is, I'm sorry, this is Orville. Hello, Orville.
Ben, I'm glad to have you two back on the air.
You're very kind.
No, you guys are very funny, picking on each other.
Tate's funny looking, I know that part.
Here's what the deal on that extra point at first, you know, kicking or whatever you want to go, that might be setting up a field goal later on during the season because, you know, the unexpected, he's just worse. Seeing what works and what don't work, and he'll play that someplace later on when it's a necessity. So, I mean, that's my opinion.
But you don't line up for a field goal with more than half a dozen guys on the left hand. What, they have eight guys over there?
No.
On the left hand side? I mean, that's just strictly an extra point situation where, you know, they thought they could trick them.
Well, he's just setting stuff up for later on in the year.
Okay.
Whatever might work, try it now.
Okay.
After in the first part of the game with the first touchdown.
Well, there's a team here in Vermilion County that they on the kickoff they always, you know, try to set something up so they can retrieve the ball and get the ball back, and eventually the teams don't know whether you're going to onside kick or you're kicking for real, so you know. They're just setting unexpected things up later on. I mean, that's my opinion. It ain't worth a whole lot.
Well, you could be right. Who knows?
Okay, you guys have a good one.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. And it's Jim is next. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Labor Day to you.
Yeah, here we are laboring on Labor Day. Is that's the right thing to do, isn't it?
They bumped your contract up for the day, I'm sure. Hey, I just wanted to call in, and I want to thank the coaches and the players for a win. A win is a win in my book. There are prettier wins to be had. but it's not a loss. I think the coaches have a lot of stuff that they can look back on this game and try to tweak some stuff. I mean, you know, practice is practice, but when you really get into games, you kind of see how things are really gelling or not gelling. So I'm sure they'll spend a lot of time this week. I think we'll see a sharper team next week. And, again, I want to be one of the positive people. I've been a fan since 68, since I moved here. And I'm not a fair-weather fan. I'm all for the Illinois teams, no matter how well they play or how well they don't. And that's kind of just my own opinion.
Well, you know, but, as far as the fans are concerned, the one thing this game did, gave Illinois a victory and took our minds off what? The war chant. Mm-hmm. That was the subject of leading up to for the fans, not the players. I don't think the players are involved in any way with that thing. And I don't think they're affected in any way.
But I would agree with that 100%.
The fans
are not happy.
The fans were not happy. And it was a very divisive move, and it was an unnecessary move that could have been done in some way. The only way I think the way to get rid of it, I think, and Jim, you can comment on this, I think was just to reduce the number of times you play it at games and then gradually let it drift away.
Either that or make the announcement when you made the decision in April and hope that it was over before the season's even started.
They were afraid it would start a ruckus that would go through the whole summer. That's why they didn't announce it.
Yeah, well, I'm very disappointed it's gone also. I miss the chief, and, you know, I'm all on the emotions of all that myself, too. But thanks again to the team and the coaches and you gentlemen for hosting the show.
Thank you. Well, you're very kind. We appreciate your call this morning, and you're right. A W is a lot better than an L. It doesn't matter what happened in that game.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Appreciate it. The question now is, how many more W's?
That's the thing that we're going to start to find out next Saturday night. Is that right? 7 o'clock kickoff?
7 o'clock. This follows a volleyball match on Friday night.
7
Stuff
o'clock.
Stuff Huff.
Yep.
Same time.
Yep.
10:53, a break here, Mr. Bond. We're coming right back and take more calls. And welcome back to our Monday morning quarterback show. Jim Turpin and DeLauren Tate. We're about to wrap it up here. We got 2 minutes to go, but we go to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Yeah. So I noticed a couple of weeks ago there was an announcement that the symbol for the U of I was being changed from the academic column symbol they've been using to using one that the football program uses, the block, you know, the big block orange. So I'm wondering, and part of Whitman's explanation, that there seems to be a movement to try to maybe unify the intercollegiate athletic program more in with the university. There has been a division between, I think anyway, between academics and the athletic department.
Well, I don't know. I suppose there are several reasons for it, but the main reason is that they had too many logos. They had too many different – they had the block eye, they had the shield, they had this, they had that, they had different colors and all that, and they tried to, put it together, and that's they decided on the block eye. I'm glad they did, for one. I like that a lot better than the shield.
And they've tried to set on an absolute color.
Yeah. An orange,
yeah.
A certain orange, as opposed to, a light orange or a dark orange or whatever.
Texas burnt orange.
Yeah, burnt orange. But I think that's a very good move. I don't know who all was involved in that, but it looks like everybody's going to do it now. I like the block eye.
Yeah, a good move. And Lauren's explanation reminded me of the preacher who came to the church and didn't like the location of the piano. So instead of moving it from one side to the other, he just moved it 1 inch at a time.
Hey, gotta go, Jim. Thanks. That's a good way to wrap it up. We'll do it again the next Monday morning at 9 o'clock on DWS in Champaign-Urbana.